Recorded Books and RB Digital present Dance of the Jacaranda by Peter Kimani. Narrated by John Sibi Okumu. Prologue. In that year, the glowworms in the marshes were replaced by light bulbs. Villagers were roused out of their hamlets by a massive rumbling that many mistook for seismic shifts of the earth. These were not uncommon occurrences. Locals experienced earthquakes across the Rift Valley so often they even had an explanation for it. They said it was God taking a walk in his universe. They believed this without needing to see it, but on that day the villagers saw the source of the noise as well. It was a monstrous, snake-like creature whose black head, erect like a cobra's, pulled rusty brown boxes and slithered down the savannah, coughing spasmodically as it emitted blue-black smoke. The villagers clasped their hands and wailed,
"Yugine, come and see the strips of iron that those strange men planted seasons earlier, which, left undisturbed, had grown into a monster gliding through the land."
The gigantic snake was a train, and the year was 1901, an age when white men were still discovering the world for their kings and queens in faraway lands. So when the railway superintendent, or simply Master, as he was known to many, peered out the window of his first-class cabin that misty morning, his mind did not register the dazzled villagers who dropped their hoes and took off, or led their herds away from the grazing fields in sheer terror of the strange creature cutting through their land. Neither did Master share in the tamasha, booming from across the coaches where British, Indian and African workers, all in their respective compartments, were celebrating the train's maiden voyage. Instead, Master was absorbed by the landscape that looked remarkably different from how he remembered it from his previous trip. The mass of water appeared to have grown from a pond into a large lake. Maybe his eyes were playing tricks on him, or maybe, after crawling through that very same land on either donkey or zebra, his lofty perch on the train now afforded him a very different view. To the left, a spring spewed hot water, the vapour casting clouds of woolly nothingness above it. One of these should be named for Sally, Master thought, the idea eliciting a mélange of soreness and softness that always came with the memories of his English wife, now estranged for 4 years. She was the reason he was looking forward to returning to England. A ship was waiting at the port of Mombasa, some 500 miles away, where the rail construction had begun. The railroad tracks ended at the head of what he had named Port Victoria, memorializing the lake there with the same name, in honor of the Queen of England. So the rail that started by the shores of the Indian Ocean now cut through the hinterland to the shores of Lake Victoria. This was the mission that had brought him to the British East Africa Protectorate, and it had now been accomplished. He had been discharged with full honor, the cable from London said, echoing the military jargon that had regulated his life for 23 years. The cable also said a letter with full details of his release had been dispatched on SS Britannia, the vessel that would then deliver him home to England. Master suppressed a smile at the thought, and further subverted the thought by pretending to scratch his pate, whose receding hairline merged with his forehead to form what looked like a small crater.
"Happy are the pure at heart," Reverend Richard Turnbull, sitting beside Master, said over the rattling sounds of the train.
"Kukuru kakara, kukuru kakara."
They held different sections of the shiny pole that served as passenger support, as though they were experienced pole dancers, though their bums never touched.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?